Welcome to the Conference for Women teleclass, How to Handle Criticism Like a Pro. Our guest today is Lila Jana, the founder and CEO of Sama and Luxme, two companies that share a social mission to end poverty around the world by giving work to people in need. Lila is also the co-author of America's Moment, Creating Opportunity in the Digital Age, as well as a young global leader of the World Economic Forum and a director of CARE USA. In today's teleclass, Lila will share the techniques she uses to remain positive when encountering the inevitable challenges that come with launching your own business. Whether you are building a startup, selling products in the field, or presenting to a management team, putting yourself out there can leave you exposed to harsh criticism. Learn how to handle criticism and use it as a tool for growth. And a reminder, today's teleclass will be available as a podcast on your conference website. If you registered through Eventbrite, you will receive an email telling you when the podcast is available. And now, Lila Jana, welcome to that Conference for Women teleclass.
Thank you so much for having me. It is such a pleasure to be here. I thought I would start by just sharing a little bit about my story and what we've experienced in terms of handling criticism. And I wanted to share specifically, you know, how we've got our new beauty brand, Luxme, off the ground and managed to court a major retailer to do distribution for us. It took a long time, and I wouldn't say the criticism was super harsh, but it was harsh enough to make me reconsider whether I should even be doing this and whether I should be an entrepreneur. So, and I'll say that prior to founding Luxme, our new skincare brand, I've been running a nonprofit organization called Sama Source for 8 years, and we brought a new concept called impact sourcing into the market, which involves training low-income people to do digital work and then working with large technology companies to hire those people to do things like data entry and image tagging. And so there was a lot of criticism of that model early on as well. And I would say that kind of learning how to deal with that prepared me for criticism in this next venture. So just a few words on Luxme. It's a new skincare brand that we started about a year ago. And it was inspired by a raw ingredient called Milotica, which is a type of shea butter that comes from northern Uganda. Most people know of northern Uganda because of Joseph Kony, who's a warlord who took control of the region and waged a 20-year battle. And it involved abductions of child soldiers and basically a reign of terror on citizens of the north. So it's mostly known in the west as a war-torn region, not the sort of place where you would want to do business. And now that the war has ended and Kony has fled, there is a huge need for economic development and jobs in the area. A lot of the women who work in northern Uganda in, you know, basic agriculture have zero economic opportunity, are living, you know, at about a dollar a day in income. And, you know, the current war that's being waged there is a war for livelihoods. So I discovered an amazing raw ingredient that Ugandans have been using for millennia. It's a type of shea butter called Milotica. It comes from this region, and importantly, harvesting this ingredient creates economic opportunity for the women who pick these nuts wild in the area. It also provides a conservation incentive to keep these beautiful wild trees alive because they're producing a nut that has value. And I thought to myself, somebody should export this and create a luxury skincare line around it that could both, you know, do great things for your skin. It's an organic, beautiful, wild ingredient, and also create economic opportunity for these women. So I thought about building a new company around this concept, and that's how Luxme was born. And, you know, I was aware that there would be challenges sourcing anything from a region like northern Uganda with very little infrastructure, very few processing facilities, poor roads, you know, poor internet connectivity. I knew that it would be challenging having built up our Sama Source business there over the years. We have a center in northern Uganda that's employed about 400 people for the nonprofit for Sama Source doing digital work. And getting that center up and running has been a complete, you know, challenge. So I thought that if we can do it with, you know, with Sama Source, it might be possible to do it with skincare, but I was really aware of what it would take. And so just getting started, getting the initial shipments of these nuts to the U.S. and evaluated by a lab took some time, and then we had to go and get clinical studies done. And then the trickiest thing was figuring out how we were going to get distribution. In the beauty space, there are two routes you can go. You can go direct to consumers, either through a direct sales model or through advertising online and trying to get people to come to your website. Or you can partner with a major distributor, retailer, to sell the product. And in our category of luxury skincare, distribution through a retailer makes a lot of sense because it's the only way that people can really try and experience the product before they purchase it. And I think there are a lot of benefits of going into a retail environment with someone who's knowledgeable about many different types of skincare brands who can position your brand against the other more established brands that consumers might be aware of. So I was aware that going through a big retailer would be important, and we started off by approaching a couple of different major retailers, and I got an introduction to Sephora through a woman I had met before in my life with Sama, who used to be my client at Google for SamaSource. And one lesson I will share is that identifying, you know, one person in an organization that you are trying to build a connection with who you know and trust and have a deep personal connection with, or you can forge that with, is really helpful. And it's one of the ways that you can check any feedback you get from other members of the team, you know, against a neutral third party. So I had this one advocate at Sephora who knew me well, who knew the way I do business and who respected me. And she helped me navigate the merchant team who we were then introduced to. And just to give you a sense of scale, Sephora has 300 stores in the United States. They're the premier beauty retailer. They're owned by LVMH, so they definitely have a luxury and a premium orientation. And so approaching them is like approaching for, you know, a consumer, a typical consumer product. It's like getting in to Target, right? It's the make or break move for your company. So the first meeting we had with them, they got really excited. I showed them beautiful images of northern Uganda and the Nile River Valley where our products come from, and they just got, you know, really riled up, and they loved the video we put together. And then I opened up the jars of the product, and there were mixed reactions. And I thought, okay, I can deal with that. And I went home. And then a week later, we came back in really excited, hoping that they would just, you know, sign the deal. And they said, this product is not going to work. In its raw format, it's too sticky. It's too rich. I don't think our customer who is, you know, in her early 20s is going to want to use this product. And you need to go back to square one and, you know, take this raw butter and formulate something with it. So we went back over 8 months and brought them new formulas. We went back, identified a lab in Los Angeles, and we were going back and forth with the lab to, you know, get the new formula to Sephora that they would like. And each time we went back, we would hear, oh, this formula is too thick, or it takes too long to dissolve into the skin, or the fragrance is not right. It's got tea tree oil in it, and that smells very Whole Foods. It's not very Sephora. Or the texture that it, you know, leaves your skin with is not good enough. And over those months, I started getting more and more disheartened. I really liked the Sephora team we were working with. I thought they were smart women who knew their industry well. And because I respected them so much and because they seemed really good at their jobs, I took their feedback to mean that basically we didn't have the chops, we didn't have what it takes to you know, to launch a product with this major retailer. Over that same time, I would check back in with my original contact there, the woman who worked at Google, who's my advocate, and I would just say to her, you know, do we think this is never going to happen? And she said, you know, look, it's okay to keep coming back to the drawing board. It's okay to take the feedback and reiterate on your formulas. Keep trying. Don't give up. And so finally, after about 9 months, we got a formula to them that they liked. And we heard back from the merchant team, and they said, oh, actually, I think this one has legs. Why don't you work on that? This seems like a great direction. And so our team rejoiced and celebrated. And we went back to the lab and we said, you know, let's make these tweaks. So there was a glimmer of hope. We went back in a month later, hoping that we would be able to launch in the spring of this year, 2016, after having told our investors that that's what we were planning and, you know, having a lot of expectations around that. And go back in early January, and the formula that they love, our lab tells us, cannot be replicated. For some reason, they gave us a formula that worked, you know, for this one sample but could not be replicated. We then went to five other labs, said the same thing. This cannot be replicated. So we went back into Sephora, and they were, of course, really pissed and said, you know, why did you give us a formula that you can't even make and replicate? And I will just say that I think the number one piece of advice I have about criticism is that you have to sort of take it for what it is, which is often feedback that you can use to improve whatever it is you're building. And I think so often we take criticism personally and we think, this means that I'm a failure, this means that my company is a failure, this means that I don't have, you know, I don't have what it takes. And I think all criticism can be turned into some form of feedback that can be useful. And you need to develop a thick enough skin to separate out any personal feelings that the criticism might bring up and focus it on how it can be useful to your overall mission and agenda. So, you know, in the case of Sephora, I knew so little about beauty that I didn't have much grounds to disagree with their feedback, and I assumed that they knew more about the customer that they were serving than I did, which is true. Had I disagreed with the feedback, another thing I learned through this process, you know, whenever we felt like we should push back a little bit harder, for example, the raw butter that we first presented to Sephora ended up being something that another retailer, QVC, really liked. They liked it so much that we're launching on QVC in September with that formula. But one thing I learned is that it's not fruitful to, once you've pushed back once or twice in a very polite and calm and impersonal way, again, kind of focusing on the shared goal that you might have with whoever you're, you know, talking with, as opposed to any personal slight or assuming that they don't know what they're talking about. That sometimes after you've pushed something, if it still doesn't stick and you're not able to change the heart and mind of the person you're speaking with, that you might be better off, you know, testing that approach with someone else. And that for every one person who says, no, this is a terrible idea, there will be someone else somewhere who agrees and thinks it's a great idea. And that was another thing that I learned, is that, you know, if you keep barking up the wrong tree, you might keep getting frustrated. And so it might be time to just test it on a different person. So that said, you know, I would say all the criticism that we've received from this one major retailer ended up being incorporated into a formula that we now feel is really ideal. We ended up developing a formula after this entire process, after the lab said they couldn't replicate what Sephora liked. We went back and we said, is there anything else in the history of all that we've showed you that you really like that we could work with? And finally, after 2 weeks, they got back to us and they said, okay, this one formula you gave us a while ago, we think there might be something there. And we took that and went to town. We went to three different labs and we developed something that eventually became Crème de Nil, which is a really lovely formula that's got just the right texture, just the right fragrance, just the right ingredient mix. We were able to make it fully natural. We worked really hard to make sure there's no ingredients that rank higher than a 0 or a 1 on the Skin Deep Index, which is the highest rating for ingredient safety and quality put out by the Environmental Working Group. So we worked night and day to make this formula happen. But all of those little pieces of criticism along the way fed this process of developing something great. Packaging followed a very similar route. The first packaging we presented to Sephora, they said, this is terrible, this will never sell, it's all black. No one wants to buy an all black package at Sephora. It's a girly, fun environment. What are you thinking? So we went back. I had a very expensive design firm. We went through several iterations with the design firm. They charged us an arm and a leg. Finally, we had to part ways with them because it was costing too much, and I brought a designer in-house. But all of that feedback ended up making it into our final jar, our final vessel, and exterior packaging, which we all feel look really beautiful. But I can point to several parts of the packaging that are responses to direct criticism from this retailer. And had we gotten disheartened and said, screw you, you guys don't know what you're talking about, or had we gotten disheartened and said, we don't have what it takes to, you know, hit the big leagues, this beautiful product would never have come to market. And so I'm really proud of the fact that criticism, you know, guided us here. And I think for so many other entrepreneurs I know who are building great products, they've gone through a similar path. And you need to experience the criticism and the doubt and the questioning to emerge with something great. And I think it's sort of, now we know, part of the process. And I wanted to share also how we took some of the learnings from the critiques that we received through our discussions with Sephora. And this applies in a business context, but I think it also applies in a personal context, and how we framed the criticism in a positive light back with that in that same conversation. So we developed, after a couple of months of realizing that the conversations were not going the way we liked, we developed a different strategy, which was each time we would have a meeting, we would take really detailed notes, and then the next meeting we had, we would always be using a PowerPoint package when we were presenting our materials. We would actually take 5 minutes at the beginning of the meeting with a slide we had made with all of the key criticism that had been given at the last meeting. So we would say, okay, last time we sat down with you, you mentioned that formula A was too oily in texture, smelled too much like tea tree oil, and dissolved too slowly on the skin. You also mentioned that our packaging was, you know, too dark, did not have enough girly elements, and did not sell the product strongly enough on the outside box. So for each of these points, here's how we've responded. And we actually used the criticism as a framework to respond positively to each dimension of critique. And that actually is what kept the relationship going, even when we were not hitting it out of the park in terms of product development. I think that 99% of the time, people just want to be heard and listened to. That probably goes in your personal life as well. I feel like whenever I have an argument, it's usually because either me or the person I'm speaking with doesn't really feel heard. And one immediate way to solve that problem is to take a few minutes at the outset of any new discussion and make sure that the person on the receiving end of your comments really feels heard. And there's no better way to make someone feel heard than to repeat back what they said at your last meeting, showing that you, A, listened, and B, are humble enough to repeat that feedback. So I wouldn't say this was hurtful criticism ever. It was product-focused, but it did sort of eat away at us until we realized that this was an opportunity to show this team that we, even though we have less experience than they do, I've never worked in a beauty company before, this is entirely new, that we were willing to roll up our sleeves and learn and collaborate and work as partners, and that was huge. The last thing I'll say on this point about criticism is that we were able, as I mentioned, to take the same formula that Sephora initially rejected and get it approved by QVC, which has a slightly different audience. And so one thing that I learned through this process is that, you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure. Sometimes you just need to try a variety of people to test an idea on a variety of people to see whether it sticks with maybe someone who's a different kind of customer than you originally intended. It's true in human relationships. Sometimes, you know, the friendship just doesn't work out and you need to move on positively and look for someone else who shares your values or shares your way of thinking more closely. In this case, we were really lucky because we developed one formula that ended up launching, will be in stores, Sephora stores in mid-September, and another formula, which is this pure raw form of the butter that I mentioned, which will be launching on QVC. And so we were able to take, you know, two different formulas through two different paths, and I think we ultimately found the best home for each of them. I'll say one final thing, and then I think I need to close and do some Q&A. As a CEO, starting off, I built Somasource over the last 8 years. I started it when I was 25, and I knew nothing about business. I'd been a management consultant before, so I'd only approached business from the outside. I felt often very personally attacked whenever someone would critique my management style or my idea. And it took years before SamaSource took off. We now have over 80 employees and a healthy budget, and we're now actually break even as a nonprofit from our earned revenue. But it took years to get to this point. And early on, I remember being so emotionally affected whenever I would receive a criticism. I had conflicts with board members, with employees, with funders, and the number one piece of advice I received in those early days that helped me, you know, and continues to help me, is don't take things personally. So often someone will be critical because they had a bad morning, because they maybe their grandmother is sick, maybe their dog is dying. You never really know the context behind a person's mental state. And so first and foremost, you have to realize that the vast majority of someone's behavior towards you is simply a reflection of their context, what might be going on behind the scenes in their own mind. And so in light of that, criticism should really only ever be seen as an opportunity to improve something or as someone else having a tough time, where your job is really to, you know, to allow them to have that tough time, but not to let it sink in, to let it roll off your back. And I think that's continued to help our business, both businesses, Sama and Luxy.
Thank you, Lila. That was an incredible story and some really valuable advice. We have quite a few questions, and one of them has to do with, what do you do when you receive contradictory feedback from different sources? How do you respond, and how do you choose which criticism to respond to?
This is such a great question, because especially in a larger retail environment, you know, with Sephora, for example, one of the ways they test new products is they have a team of people, you know, as merchants, and then they also test the products as a company. So if the merchant likes your product, she'll bring it into the office and she'll have 10 women take it home and try it, get their feedback, and it's sort of an informal panel of experts. And so sometimes we would hear, so-and-so really loved the formula, but another person really hated it. And we would think, oh my goodness, what do we do with this? Is it just, you know, majority rules? Do we just look at the number of people? I think it's a combination of ensuring that you are getting your product or your service or, you know, whatever hypothesis you're testing to a broad enough group of people that you've ensured that your potential customer or audience is within that group of people. So you're not just giving the formula to a bunch of women between 20 and 25 when your formula might actually be ideal for someone who's 55. As long as you have a broad enough sample of people in your feedback group, you can then try to understand whether there's any certain group that it sticks with. If it does stick with, you know, one or two of those people, then you can go further and try to recruit more people who fit that same demographic and see if they validate the hypothesis further. So I would say one of the things I've learned is that every product, every idea has an audience. Some products like Facebook have a very, very broad audience. Other products like anti-aging skincare, you know, specifically for African American women, has a different, you know, a much more specific audience. And understanding the right audience for your idea or product is really key. So I would try to drill down, you know, first. And then if I still get contradictory feedback from that group, it comes down to gut feeling. And I will take time. I will meditate on the issue. Some people pray about it. But I will go through my own internal evaluation process to come to the right outcome. And sometimes, you know, I've gone forward with decisions when not everybody agreed, but I've said, this is what I truly believe. I've done the internal reflection. And then it takes commitment and follow through. And if the idea ends up not working out, it also takes a certain humility to say, okay, well, maybe I was wrong, and we're going to go back to the drawing board.
Okay, great. Good insight. You talked about, I guess, the tendency of so many of us to take criticism personally, and how incredibly difficult but important it is to turn the criticism and, towards the topic at hand. How do you take negative and sometimes hurtful criticism and turn it into a positive? That is, seems like such important advice, but so hard for so many people.
It's so hard. And, you know, I think there are two types of criticism, two motivations for criticism. One is personal flight. I need to attack this other person because it's coming from a place of my own hurt. A lot of schoolyard taunting, bullying, you know, I think even sexual remarks made in an office, like a lot of those very personal attack-like criticisms come from people who are themselves suffering. Maybe they had abuse, maybe they had trauma as a child, you know, maybe they suffer from some kind of a mental or emotional condition. The second type of criticism is the kind of criticism that we received, you know, on our product, which is we just don't think this actual thing that you're presenting is good enough for the audience. It's coming not from a place of, you know, hurt or suffering on the part of the issuer. It's coming from, you know, practical business sense. It's coming from, you know, intellectual criticism of an object, right? So it's coming from a very, very different part of the brain, I would imagine. So I think first off, one needs to divide, you know, one needs to really understand what is the motivation of the person who's sharing this with me. And let me first take anything that can be useful to my overall objective and see if I can incorporate it. So let's say the person says, this product sucks, it's too greasy, and I think you have no business selling it because you don't look like a CEO, right? That criticism has two parts. One is, okay, the product might be too oily. Let me investigate that. Is the product too oily? Who else could I test this, you know, product with to understand whether this criticism is valid? And, you know, maybe I need a larger sample group and I'll test it with 30 of my friends, take notes on what they say, and maybe if I'll, you know, 20 of them say it's too oily, maybe there's some merit to that. The second piece is you have no business selling this because you don't look like a CEO. Okay, well, let me understand, where might that be coming from? Why would that person tell me that? Is there any set model for what a CEO should look like? Let me look at Oprah, you know, let me look at Steve Jobs. There's probably not. Anyone can be a CEO. That comment might have been motivated by something other than an objective, intellectual, you know, discussion of the merits of my product. So I'm going to take that as a personal slight that this person issued because maybe he or she has had discrimination in his past, or, you know, maybe there's some personal motivation for saying that. And if I let that get to me personally, I'm just continuing or perpetuating this, you know, trauma or negativity that this person experienced. I think so often the tendency, including for myself, is to issue a retort. You're wrong. You're terrible. Anyone can be a CEO. You're a bigot. That never ends up working, right? I think the correct response to hurtful language or speech is, as hard as it can be, is compassion. Sometimes the compassionate thing, often the compassionate thing, is just to walk away. For me, I've tended to notice that whenever someone is extremely negative in a personal way, it comes from something that is going on in that person's life, that if I really stretch my, you know, my own limits, I can have compassion for. So often, you know, people who are angry at us in the middle of the street have had something bad happen to them. You know, you never know. What if their son just died, right? What if they're going through some personal trauma? And if I respond negatively, all I'm doing is I'm allowing that trauma and that negativity to persist in the universe instead of ending it right then and there.
Great. We have time for one more question. And this one has to do, as a CEO and as a leader of a team, how do you find ways to help your colleagues through criticism? You have to deliver criticism yourself, I'm sure, in your role. How do you make sure that other people take away the constructive intent of your words?
I think the popular shit sandwich approach, pardon my language, is the right one, which is whenever you have to deliver negative feedback, make sure it is preceded by something positive and ended with something positive. And if you think about it, there is something positive to say about every person in your life. There are always two things that you can say, including, you know, you did such a great job on the, you know, design of this presentation. However, pages 3, 4, and 5 have major typos. Let's try to fix those. I know you can do it because you did such a great job on the last presentation we did. It took me a while to get there. like many people who I think are entrepreneurs, I had things in my childhood that made me, you know, never feel like I was good enough or adequate. And so my personal response to criticism, especially early on in this job, was to feel slighted and upset. And I would often criticize in the same way that I felt that I had been criticized when I was growing up, which is, you know, not accompanied by positive remarks. It's just less effective. And as a leader, what you learn is that the more you piss off the people in your team, the less you get done. So it's in everyone's interest for people to feel motivated and positive and happy about their jobs, to feel liked and respected by their team, and for the job to get done with minimal mistakes, right? And so the best way for that to happen is if they feel like, okay, this was a mistake I made, it's easily fixable, and it's not an attack on my character. I'm still a good person. I'm still smart and competent, and this is just a normal human mistake. So the more you can sort of frame things that way, the better performance you can get out of your team. And I should add, I was not always this zen about criticism. It took me a long time and a lot of trial and error to realize that I think this is the only way that that really works.
Great. Thank you so much. That is all we have time for today. Our thanks to Lila Janna, CEO of Salma and Luxme. If you'd like to hear more from Lila, she'll be speaking at the Pennsylvania Conference for Women on October 6th. Register at www.paconferenceforwomen.org. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much.